from every culture
over the world
to right here
in our ports and our city,
people make
Southampton
Voice FM.
You're listening to Southampton's Voice FM. My name's Zan, and welcome to Your Green Voice. My guest today is Matt Ryan. He is an associate professor in governance and public policy at the University of Southampton. And the reason he's here is because Southampton City Council, the University of Southampton, and a public participation charity, Involve, are inviting people to help shape upcoming citizens' assemblies on climate change and transport. Citizens' assemblies bring an inclusive and diverse set of people together, engage them in informed and safe deliberation, and provide recommendations to decision makers on complex issues. And the first meeting was last Saturday in Woolston. And Matt, welcome to the show. And were you happy with how the meeting went last week?
Yeah, I was really, really pleased. For the most part, we always learn every time we do meetings with the public a little bit, you know, how to do it better and that. But I think it was really nice to see, we invited, you know, we were trying to get the word out about these, but we invited a number of civil society organizations to come and join us, and there was a healthy number of people there, and they all contributed in a really nice way to trying to help us decide some of the preliminary decisions we have to make about this assembly, citizen assembly that will happen in November in the city, to discuss important questions about transport and the climate assembly. So how we I think you want to ask me and talk a little bit about the question that we're going to ask, which is what these initial meetings are about, is about, you know, what is the question we should be asking at this event.
So to get in the mind of the listener, what exactly is happening here? The Citizens' Assembly is like the World Cup, and this is like the qualifying rounds.
It's not the worst analogy I've ever heard, actually. So a bit, yeah, exactly. For the benefit of the listener, you've just done a clenched fist in the air, so just like it was a World Cup win. But yeah, so the idea here is normally we're trying to always innovate in democracy and improve the way we do democracy and try and think about new ways to give people a voice on important decisions. And citizens' assemblies, people have probably heard about, maybe, some people will have at least. So that's where you get a kind of a random or quasi-random selection of people so that they're kind of descriptively representative and diverse, and they represent the city in a way that maybe we don't normally see, and we get people who don't normally engage in politics engaging in that way to decide something important. So that's going to happen. We're going to do that in November. But what we don't often do is really give people outside of those selected a chance to actually influence the agenda. And we really wanted to hear from a diverse range of civil society groups, those that represent all kinds of different viewpoints on this. And that's why we're holding these initial meetings, is to try and get, you know, they're being held in different parts of Southampton and online as well. And it's just to try and get input on making sure, you know, we have to scope a question. We can't discuss, you discuss this every week on your radio show, we can't discuss in 4 weekends everything there is to do about issues climate, but we want to make sure that we're doing the most effective thing in the most effective way based on the, you know, the different things that people can tell us about their lives and how they perceive these issues in this city.
Okay, because that's in the citizens' assemblies when 20,000 people from Southampton will be invited to take part in answering the question and coming up with ideas. And normally that question would be set by a small group of people who sort of are well-informed, understand the situation. But what you're saying is that question is going to be shaped this time by these groups of people who are meeting within this qualifying round.
Yeah, that's more or less right. So there's a couple of things I'd clarify. One is that there'll be 20,000 people will be invited to sign up and show an interest in taking part. Obviously, as I described before, we want to make sure that this is a really a diverse process. And what actually happens then is once you've shown an interest, there'll be a selection mechanism whereby we will kind of stratify and randomly select people and invite them. So it's actually only 40 people will engage in the eventual deliberation, although any, you know, you should look out for a letter basically in September, October time, because you know, lots of people will get these invites, and again, that's a random selection that based on your on addresses that will get that. And then, as you suggested, most of the time, obviously, you can't start. You have to start somewhere. And if we just ask a question like, "What do you think about climate?" You know, we could go on for days and days and days. And that's why you have radio shows and things like that. So this is the idea here is we've scoped things a little bit because we want to know, for example, what can the local government here have an effect on, and also we've scoped things a little bit in terms of you know, what are the most important issues facing the city in this respect. But beyond that, in terms of how we actually ask the question, anyone who engaged with the politics around Brexit referendum and thing like that, you know, the question you ask is really important. So we want to get the question right, and we want to do some upfront scoping activity open to everyone in the city to come along and tell us what they think we're doing. And some of them will tell us we think you're doing it wrong, and some of them will tell us that sounds okay, but we need to everyone to talk to each other so that we make sure that everyone's had an input on this that wants to and needs to.
You made a very good point in there that the question can be answered, and the council can actually take action on this question. So it might not be everything that environmentalists want, but the answer is actually something that can take place. So the result of this process, the council will be able to do something positive as a positive change.
That's the idea. And, you know, we're all restricted in government by our jurisdictions and our abilities to do things. Obviously, we can talk to other people and try and convince them to do things. And that's partly what this is about. So, yeah, exactly. That's part of the scoping mission, if you like. And we've talked to people in this. I mean, you came and observed this on Saturday. And there are elements of, well, you know, we could restrict this to a very narrow scope. And we kind of know that we lawmakers here can legislate on that, or our officers can take that further. Or we can kind of move into some areas that are kind of, you know, maybe they can do a little bit less on, but maybe they can try and convince others to do work on. But that's kind of it's very abstract in the way I'm talking about it, but that's kind of the decision you have to make. And it's nice because it gives people an understanding of what it's like for government to try and work in these complex systems and try and get things done as well. So there's a lot of learning goes on in all different ways in these processes.
Yeah, because the question, I've written it down, I'm not too sure I wrote it down absolutely 100%.
Oh, I haven't learned it off by heart either, but no, it's not set in stone yet. So
that's good. So yeah. It's roughly like this, and it will definitely be different in autumn. But how do we decarbonize the transport system in Southampton so that it is safe, easy and connected for people to get around, which is not quite the best of English, so I must have missed out one or two words there. But it is the decarbonisation of the transport system, and that is very interesting because of the variety. What I found interesting was the point people were making. It's not just the planes, it's not just the cruise ships and the containers, but it's also how they are supplied by services alongside our normal people getting around in cars.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you can think that, well, why aren't we talking about other aspects of transport? But then when you suddenly get to really engage with an issue and you see the complexity of it and all the different moving parts, you kind of realize the governance of this is so complex and there's lots of things we need to do and we need to adapt. And you know, sometimes it's easy to say we have all the answers already. Why aren't we doing this or why aren't we doing that? But at the end of the day, all these things have to fit together in a very clear process. So these are complicated things, and we need to try and have a bit of a conversation to inform people about different perspectives, what different people know about these different issues, and then try and decide roughly what's the most effective thing for us to do. What do people really care about? What's really affecting their lives in important ways around transport? And if there's going to be a transition to a different kind of way of doing, of getting around the place and getting the things we want to move around the place and getting out to different parts of the world and all those things that probably need to happen, how are we going to do that better? We need everyone's voice in there. So yeah, that's kind of part of you're shedding some light on the kind of complexity that we want to give people a chance to get familiar with and have a say on. And like you said about the question, that these are, you know, the adjectives that we use will determine a little bit the scope and the direction of travel for what people will talk about. So we want to know whether those adjectives make sense to people. We want to know whether the way that we're describing things will resonate with people and the things that are important to them. So that's why we're doing this process, to try and give. And it, as I said, this is kind of unusual. It's a little innovation in the sense of where climate assemblies have been done throughout the UK now, several places across Europe. They're happening very regularly because it's recognized as a new legitimate way of doing politics. And they do really engage a cross-section of the community. It's not just, you know, people who are very activist in one way or another. And that's the whole point, is you kind of exclude to some extent it's an exclusion rather than an inclusion mechanism. So it's very inclusive, but it's because you exclude maybe people who get a say all the time, and you give a kind of a wider cross section of groups a say. So we want to get as many people as possible to come and tell us what they think the agenda is, essentially, in terms of what they think within this scope. And, you know, as I said, we had to do a little bit of work up front just to make sure that we didn't start from nowhere. But we really do want people's input and them to come and tell us what they think. And we're trying to take that all on board and summarize it in a clever process that gets across, you know, how we can efficiently make you know, decisions while including the perspectives in the right way.
Now, you mentioned adjectives. Mm. So which adjectives are you using? Have you rejected any?
No, nothing's off the table. We've consulted a little bit with the groups involved. Like you mentioned, we've got the university, we've got involved, who've ran a lot of these things in the UK, and obviously the city council working with us on this. So we've talked a little. We've talked to people who have expertise on this to see where they're coming from on this. So we've set ourselves out with some options to lead off with. But like the adjectives that you mentioned in there, I think safe was one of them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a question. One of the things we're doing in these sessions that you've talked about is to say to people, well, here's a set of another 9 potential adjectives. Would that materially change the way things are discussed in a way that you'd prefer? Another question we're asking people is, what's missing here, right? Is this the right thing the right way to ask this question? And, you know, these are safe spaces. You know, I'm not going to report on what people said in them. Obviously, if you go there, you'll find out what people are saying in them. And, you know, people are challenging this. They're having really kind of grown-up conversations about what are the right things to talk about here. And, you know, these are professionally facilitated by people who've done a lot of this work. So it's a really good opportunity, I think, for people to come along and learn something and contribute as well.
Well, I must admit, it is very frustrating. I can't mention what people were saying, but we can discuss how they were saying it. And I thought, you're right, it was grown up. It was a conversation, and it was rather than a debate. So, you know, some people think a debate should have one person lying on the floor crying and the other one sort of high-fiving and being all glad, whereas this was more like, well, I think this, and then someone's saying, I think that, and then, well, we better write this down, and where's your point and where's your point? Were you happy with the way that people were interacting with each other?
I really was. There's 2 things to say here. One is that, yeah, I think I'm glad to hear that you got that perspective from this, because what we're trying to put in place is a kind of a safe space for people to meet people from different walks of life, and they might disagree, but they do it in a way that's respectful, that they're kind of, if you want to, you know, one of the principles here is that if you really want someone to change their behavior or do something differently, it's up to you to convince them in a grown-up way in words that they can understand as to why they should do that. So people are coming together and trying to understand that. At the same time, and I think this is an important point to make, we're not trying to mollify the process of politics and try and say that, you know, we're all going to agree on everything forever. You know, that's not realistic. What we do want to make sure is that everyone has an input into the process, so that if we do have to make compromises, that they are compromises. And like you said, it's not a kind of a winner takes all type of a politics that we might see elsewhere. So that's part of the logic of some of these new ways of doing democracy that we're trying to innovate all over the world with. And I'm really happy that, because we've been studying these things all over the world and playing with them in large cities across Europe and North America and South America, and now we're able to do it in Southampton. So that's really, really, you know, pleasing from our point of view.
That's very interesting. This is a worldwide change, a gradual worldwide change.
Yeah. So for like my life's work in terms of the work I do and the research I do is about what we call democratic innovation. So that's new ways of doing democracy that try and involve generally people who wouldn't normally get involved and deepen democracy. So that's everything from referenda to citizens' assemblies, randomly selected assemblies. We study processes like participatory budgeting, where people come from all over and decide the budget of the city. We look at online innovations, ways that people can vote using voter advice applications. So there's loads going on there that's trying to actually solve the problems that we know we have in our politics and in democracy, where they don't always work as we might like. Now, we have to always, you know, never forget that representative democracy works pretty well, you know, compared to some other forms of rule that we might end up in. You know, and it does protect people's rights to a great extent compared to some of the ways that we lived for hundreds of years. But we want to try and supplement that a little bit where it fails. And that's kind of a lot of what the work we've been doing. And this is really one good example of that. And it's not the first time Southampton's done some interesting stuff, but this is something really significant, I think, in terms of the commitment from, you know, large, important organisations in the city to try and really do something, because we kind of know this is an important issue. It's a divisive issue in some ways, but it's an important issue that we have to try and figure out what we're going to do around this. And that's what this process is here to do, is to try and solve some of those processes in a kind of clever, collective, intelligent way.
Well, yes, and I think, if you don't mind staying, I'd like to talk more about how divisive this issue is.
Sure.
Because I think that's one of the strange parts about the environment and the debate around it.
Yeah, can I just kind of give you a few thoughts?
Yes, I'd love to hear what you have to say. So our guest is Matt Ryan. He's an associate professor in governance and public policy at the University of Southampton. We're talking about citizens' assemblies, also the environment, and that's coming up in a moment on Your Green Voice.
Southampton's Voice.
Voice FM.
Let's hear more from Ian at Station Motors.
I think it's important to have a family business. My customers relate to it. I've been doing cars for people and now I'm doing their son's cars. My daughter works in reception and my son's nearly a fully qualified accountant. He does my bookwork, both very good drivers. I used to walk to school past his garage. It was a petrol station back then. So I ended up buying the garage off that family, you know. So I like to think I've brought my family into that family business.
Station Motors Woolston by the Itchen Bridge.
You name it, we'll collect it.
So a bed?
Yep.
A sofa?
Yep.
All right, what about a shed?
Yes.
So anything?
Everything non-hazardous.
Hi there, I'm Steve.
And I'm Woody.
And we're the co-founders of Ethiclear.
We collect waste and clear houses.
And we do it ethically.
Because if your waste is good enough to be used again,
we'll make sure it is.
As Ethiclear has a network of like-minded people around Southampton.
So for anything
of almost any size
that you can't shift,
book your clearance at ethiclear.co.uk.
Voice FM. Voice FM.
Your Green Voice here every Thursday at 2 o'clock, one of the few environmental radio shows in the UK, possibly the world, but we are concerned about the future. However, you can get involved in shaping Southampton's future transport policy. And that is through a citizens' assembly at the end of autumn. 20,000 invitations are going to go out. That 20,000 people will be then boiled down in a very pleasant manner to 40. And the person who is shaping this, who's helping Southampton City Council understand what's going on, is Matt Ryan, Associate Professor in Governance and Public Policy at the University of Southampton. In the last part of the show, Matt, you were talking about how this is happening around the world, these citizens' assemblies. Is it, obviously, as we're doing it here, it must be effective. But what kind of changes are you seeing being shaped in other countries?
Yeah, so, effective, it's effective in lots of different ways, right? So you could think of effects in terms of, do the people involved learn something and do they feel differently about the subject matter? So in this case, climate and transport, but in other cases, there's citizens on electoral reform or... famously in Ireland there was stuff on gay marriage, on legalizing abortion. In other places they've done various different kind of things, migrant voting rights, all kinds of different things. So it could have an effect on policy making. Obviously you would want, if people spend a lot of time in a process, you want to make sure that something actually happens as a result of it. And that's been the problem with some of the early ones, and why we've innovated to try and change to make sure that there's ways to make sure that these things do have effect on policy. There's effects on people outside of the assembly itself. So one of the other things is, you know, using media and all that, you want to transmit that these things are happening and why they're happening and why they're legitimate and everything to the wider populace, because thankfully, you know, most of us don't spend all our day thinking about politics all day long. There's some weird nerds like me that do, but there's, you know, most people don't, and that's a good thing for the most part. But we want to make sure that, you know, we know that people are disenfranchised and disappointed. So there are different kind of effectivenesses of these kind of processes. Preferably what you want is good outcomes for people. At the end of the day, they're not really worth doing if they're not transforming some people's lives and their ability to to be happier, do things better, you know, get the goods that they want from life in the way that they want them, protect them from harm, whatever it might be. So you can think of how that all fits into what we're doing.
Yeah, because you mentioned earlier, and if you've just joined us, you might not have heard this, the innovation you're talking about in some respects is the fact that the question that's been asked, whatever the answer is, the council can implement it because they've got the power based around the question. The power they have shapes the question in many respects.
There's an element to that, right? So it's not that they will take everything that's said from the assembly and immediately go and do all of that right away. That's not realistic, because policymaking is a messy process with lots of actors involved. And one of the things you do, and that might sound disappointing, one of my mentors used to say democracy is designed to disappoint, and that's because we all have to compromise on something and come together. So there's no one winning. There's no dictator who's just getting everything they want all the time, and you have to kind of, so it's not the case that, you know, but what we're trying to do is make sure that the working with the council and working with everyone involved, that the things that come out of that, they're timed and they are decided in a way that gives it the most possible chance of making a significant impact on the kind of policies that are in line to be decided in, you know, if it reports in early 23, are in line to be decided in 2024, you know. So that's the kind of that's the kind of game that you're trying to play and optimize to make sure that this works well for everybody involved.
You mentioned the fact that people aren't thinking about politics all the time, but when it comes to the environment, I think more people are thinking about it. It's up there with people's worries. It's mm-hmm. probably the number one or number two, I think, as yep. far as surveys go. However, it does seem really divisive. And I asked you to maybe help us understand why it is divisive. And I'll just give a little example. Is that I've met three people recently when I've been talking about certain issues that I've been told about by guests. And it sounds bleak and something, you know, something bad could happen. They go, oh, don't worry, the planet will survive. Mm-hmm. Sort of bit basically saying, well, humanity will be wiped out, but don't worry, the planet will survive. Mm-hmm. And it's, for me, that's like a really crazy idea, because I quite like humanity. I think, you know, I think there's loads of people, we're all just doing living, you know, but why yep. should we all get wiped out? So why are people that way inclined, that either they're going to say, no, it's not happening, climate deniers, so to speak, or that people are on the opposite, just saying, well, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think probably most people will recognize that experience, whatever side of the fence they're on in this respect, if there's a fence to be on the sides of. But actually, that's a kind of a bad metaphor, because most people have very nuanced positions on this. And when you're having a conversation, they might throw out things like, oh, it doesn't matter. But, you know, there's a lot to unpack here. So one is, it might be that people are afraid, you know, and they don't want to express that. And they don't, you know, it's complicated and it's hard to get your head around some of these things. It might be that people have very good reasons to not want to change their behavior, because they're really dependent on some of the things that will have to change the most. And it's kind of a question about how we mitigate that for those people if we do decide we have to make changes in a particular way. It might be that we're wrong and they've just got it. And you have to accept that as a Democrat. You have to go in open and you have to say, and I think that's the message to get across to people, is if this is a chance for you to convince your fellow citizens, and that's hard work, right? You know, but politics is hard work, and there's a reason why we should sometimes, you know, it feels, looking at some of the more dodgy things that go on that we see in the news, to forget that a lot of people were outsourcing the hard work of doing the compromise to them a lot of the time. And it's a chance to go and do a bit of that and get your own ideas across. But certainly, yeah, there are huge challenges that we're facing, and, you know, we're doing these things on these issues. The reason these issues are divisive is because they're hugely challenging, and people are going to naturally disagree on them, because it's going to require different things from different people that will appear unfair. And it's about trying to find ways to make those things more fair by talking to each other and trying to understand, you know, what are the real issues for people? Can you convince me that I should be doing something completely differently? I should have gone completely vegan and we shouldn't have been talking about eggs this morning. Or is it, you know, and what is it? And it might be that I completely agree with your argument around that, but I still don't have the capacity or the tools within me, because I don't know how to switch to a different diet, or I have issues because, you know, I am in a certain financial situation, whatever it might be. So those are the kind of things. So you can see how this gets really complicated really quickly, because there's so many moving parts. And again, that's why you have to think about these. And you're not going to be able to fix everything all the time. But luckily, you know, there's constantly decisions we can make. And I think it's very important not to be too kind of completely obsessed with our own capacities to be able to fix everything. But at the same time, one of the interesting things about humans is we have faced significant challenges and we've overcome them in clever ways. And we've done that because we've got better at doing that over time, apparently. But, you know, people talk about technologies that can save us or that can destroy us. But democracy, and that's actually a really important technology that we've developed for solving our disputes. And we're trying to kind of do that better all the time. So I think that's why, when you have a divisive issue or you have something, you have to try and understand, well, what's going on here? How do we do it? Let's not just shout at each other and get to the bottom of this and see what, you know, how it is that we can really affect what's going on.
I could carry on talking about this. I am trying to make some time, just a little bit more time, but it's fascinating what you're saying. And I mean, I'm quite happy to not play the next song, okay? Because I lined it up because I wanted you to hear it. But I've got a question for you. That without naming anyone, let's say political parties or anything like that around the world, but is there a crisis, do you think, in leadership at the moment? And I don't mean in political parties, but actually in business, because they seem unable to make a decision about what we're doing.
That's a great question. It's a really hard one to answer because you can see both sides of the argument in the sense that, in one way, yeah, the institutions that we have been bad at allowing leaders to lead. So in a way, it's been almost too easy for them to be risk-averse in the sense of not taking important decisions when they need to take them and passing them off to other groups. And you can see why, because the way we're set up, it's almost like there's a fear of failure in terms of doing anything in terms of leadership. At the same time, we are learning a lot all the time about leadership, right? You know, and we are doing things better. You know, you would have to say that we are organizing societies better than we did in, you know, some people will disagree with me on this, but we are organizing societies better than we did years and years ago. So that's a very good question.
Well, thank you very much. But I think what you just said there with making it too easy for leaders to lead is a very good answer. Okay, that is really interesting. I'm really going to think about that because I see exactly where you're coming from, because they especially of big companies or what have you, they've got to look after the shareholders, but but the shareholders, all they care about is profit, and that they're not there going, yeah, you're destroying the planet or you're doing something that's detrimental to the planet.
Yeah, but the shareholders don't want to die either, right? So even though they might want to increase their profits, they're also, I mean, one of the interesting things about business is that business are also very good at, you know, making sure that, because they're at the end of the day, if things don't go well for businesses, they lose their business. So, you know, they're part of the solution as well in the best way. And it's about, you know, they're in a way, businesses are the greatest social scientists, because there's money on the line for them to make sure that they understand people and give them the products they need and the things they want to deliver. So if our demands are for things that, you know, will make profit for shareholders, I mean, you can get into debates about different ways of organizing society and we don't have time for that. But, you know, I think it's very complicated and what you're saying resonates, but also, we can't just kind of, it's too simplistic to say, oh, it's all because of this profit narrative that we're not getting the goods we want or whatever it is. There's all kinds of complicated arguments about that, but yeah.
Matt, thank you very much for your time.
From every culture
over the world
to right here
in our ports and our city,
people make
Southampton
Voice FM.
Sweet Pea Florists, Bridge Road, Woolston.
Sweet Pea Florists, for all occasions and celebrations. Sweet Pea Florists.
Call Southampton 02380 433154 or visit them at sweetpeaflorist.co.uk. Flowers for all occasions.
Sweet Pea Florists.
Visit the girls in the flower shop on the corner of Bridge Road and Defender Road, Woolston.
This is the sound of exercise when it's made fun. It's called Visosport and it started in Southampton. You meet up, you play fun games, you exercise, you laugh, you keep fit. It's for people of all abilities. Visit visosport.net or search for Visosport in Meetup and have fun getting fit.
Don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes. And don't put in your recycling bin dirty tins and dirty plastic bottles.
If any of your recycling is dirty, greasy or wet, your whole bin could be rejected. So follow this golden rule. Keep your recycling clean, dry and loose. And remember,
don't put in your recycling bin greasy pizza boxes.
This message is supported by Voice FM. And if you want to know more about recycling in Southampton, visit voicefmradio.co.uk/recycling.